wants to go first.
Atul?
Yeah, actually I have not much of an update. So I've been working on trying to figure out the micro benchmark. And Leo said to look into the file bench and other workloads. They might have some similar workloads. So I've been looking into file bench. I didn't find any similar workload for mapping or syncing there. They're mostly writes and sequential.
File bench, right?
Yeah.
There are ones called file.
I'm just looking into the description of the workloads.
Right. I know file takes as an input. File is quite sophisticated. It takes an input in script in which you can specify many, many parameters.
Yeah, and I think there's a way to make new workloads or something like that.
Right, and it's possible that you can specify, I want you to memory map this or...
Yeah, I've been looking into that. Just initial look. And besides that, I just started to look at the SQLite pager. So there's no result, just working on it. So hoping to look into pager and SQLite pager system and change it to use pager system.
Do you have a user space library to... That do the same the system calls for you, or do you just
no, I just write up
directly to the from the application.
Yeah.
But by the way, we haven't sent. I just realized that we didn't send the monthly update to Intel last month, and they didn't remember it either, I guess. But I want to send something end of this month.
Okay.
So, it would be good to have a more comprehensive update that covers the last couple of months since our previous update.
Okay.
So Atta, with respect to your full paper submission, right? The main work would be evaluation related, is that correct?
Yeah.
What about did we get to talk about the detailed design in this current paper?
No. Oh, not at all. Just had a figure of the review system.
One thing which I do want to do is to read this paper for memory persistency.
Yeah,
the one I sent you.
Yeah.
And these guys, you know, the nice thing about this paper I felt was they explore the set of persistence properties that could be exposed at the CPU level and which could be used by an application. So application can choose given a certain what they call as a persistency model. Persistency model says that the CPU implements a certain kind of persistency guarantee for you, certain ordering guarantee for you. And given a CPU that provides a certain kind of persistency model, and they talk about a few different models, how can an application use that model, right? And they use this multi-threaded queue data structure to use these models. And the reason I feel like this would be important for us to compare against what we do is we'll be able to determine where in the spectrum of models do we fit in? What are we assuming? Because we are assuming certain persistence capabilities, right? So, for instance, the Intel, what is the PM commit or
P commit
instruction implements as one of these models that this paper talks about, and so it would be good for us to discuss this paper or at least some of the high-level ideas in one of our future meetings. So I think, Leo, this applies to you as well.
Yeah, I started to read it. I haven't finished it.
This was published in ISCA last year. And Peter Chen is a really big guy in operating systems from Michigan. You know, he worked on the Rio Vista project a long time back in 92, 93, something like that, where they used NVRAM to provide persistent memory to a system and use it as a file cache as well, file system page cache. So, and he also did the work on Rethink the Sync. I don't know if you've seen that paper. Rethink the Sync. If you haven't read that paper, I think it would be...
I remember the name, but...
It's a really nice paper to read. Rethink the Sync.
I just don't remember what is it about.
It's about, you know, when you make writes, synchronous writes, then the application waits until the write is actually committed to disk. They change that model. They said that the application can continue executing and it blocks only when it externalizes some output to a user, you know, human user or over the network. And until then, since everything is inside the machine, it is okay because you could potentially do rollback. Let's say the write failed or something bad happened. It didn't succeed. Then they checkpoint the state at which you started this, what they call a speculative execution. The machine keeps progressing, although the process issued a synchronous write, it continues, but in speculative mode. As long as nothing is made visible externally to a human or over the network, it can keep going.
Are we talking about CPU instructions?
Yeah, CPU instructions. Say you write an application. Let's say you have an application that does a synchronous write. Conventionally, a synchronous write means that the application would wait until the write makes it to some persistent storage. But that can take a while.
Right.
So instead, what these guys say is that rather than waiting for the write to complete, keep going, but in speculative mode. The way you keep going in speculative mode is that you checkpoint your current state so that you can roll back to that state at some later point in time.
So the actual execution is rollback?
Yes.
Wow.
Read that paper. It's really interesting. Rethink the Sync.
Okay.
The reason I bring it up is that Peter Chen was... also part of that work.
Okay.
It's an OSGI 2006 paper. I really think the same paper. So it would be good if we can discuss, let's say, in a week's time, this paper. So by then, all of us will have sufficient time to read it.
Okay.
What do you think about the Mosin?
The Mosin paper is quite interesting, I thought. I think it addresses one of the most important questions of persistent memory, which is how do you make your writes to persistent memory reliable under single node failures or under all kinds of failures. I think from that standpoint, they have some interesting direction. But what was a little bit surprising to me, I mean, I do not disbelieve them, but it's very surprising to me to see that flushing, you know, when you do a write and you want it to be persistent locally in persistent memory, you have to flush caches. You have to, you know, when you do a sync, you need to make sure that everything that might potentially be stuck in a CPU cache is flushed out to persistent memory. Doing that apparently in their environment turned out to be more expensive than doing an RDMA over the network to a remote node's memory of an entire page and then getting back an acknowledgement. That was, for me, the most surprising thing.
And that's why they don't need Flash, because RDMA is cache coherent. That's what they say.
Flash is not relevant to this discussion, right?
They're saying we can do only do RDMA because RDMA is cache coherent, so we don't need to do the cache line flashing.
Flush. You mean
flush
not
yeah.
Flash.
Not, yeah, flush.
Flush. Yeah, you don't need to do flushing because, yes, RDMA is cache coherent.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I have some confusion also, because... What does cache coherency mean? Because
cache coherent means that when you're doing an RDMA operation, you typically read from DRAM and write it to some I/O device or over the network. But if your data is stuck in the CPU cache, it's not in DRAM. Reading from DRAM may mean that you're reading stale data.
Mm-hmm.
A cache coherent DRAM, cache coherent RDMA means that you will read the latest data. Whether it's, if you're reading from memory, you'll read it from the CPU cache. If it's stuck in CPU cache, that's what cache coherent RDMA means.
Isn't it same as flushing the cache, flushing a line of the cache to the disk? Because if they're reading from the cache, then I just don't get the difference, because you're not flushing the cache lines, but you're reading from the cache or the as they're cache coherent, as they say. The RDMA actually reads from the cache lines. So somehow I think they're both similar, flushing the cache line or reading from the cache line. I just don't...
It's a good point. I mean, whether the costs are the same, and they're saying that it is not.
Yeah.
Their measurements say that it is not the same cost.
Did they show data?
Yeah, they have data.
Latency, yeah.
They have data, they have multiple applications. They have Google, Hashtable, YCSB, FileBench, lots of stuff in here. MongoDB.
It's very congruent.
PMFS, they implemented PMFS on top of their dual replicating RDMA stuff. Well, actually, they didn't implement PMFS. They just ported PMFS to use their persistence mechanisms.
Does that mean that the idea that we have about network, it's obsolete? Maybe my intuition about latency of network is completely obsolete.
Either that or syncing cache line flushing is too expensive.
Or both.
Or both. Yeah, I would highly recommend that, you know, we read both these papers, Mojim paper, and the memory persistency paper. Yeah.
I somehow find the Mojim paper not that easy to read. Like, the information are scattered.
Not presented very well, is what you're saying.
Yes, not free-flowing. Suddenly there's a new thing when you're reading the paper.
Yeah, some papers are better written than others, certainly. But this paper made it into AskPLOS.
And there are a lot of things.
15 this year. Certainly a lot of work that went into this. Right? Okay, so... So yes, so Leo, do you want to tell us you started earlier?
Right. So there are basically two items that I need to do to finish, at least for now, the library. One of which is exporting the rollback mechanism, and I think it's fairly straightforward because that's basically implemented. I just probably have to refactor the logic so that it is part of a function that I can call on the outside world. The second one is a delete, and we started talking about that, but then I put that on hold because I moved to the fixed memory mapper backend. So I would like to go back to the delete and get your feedback. Basically, I'm stuck. I'm not really sure how to implement. I know we talk about this in different states, but I would like to refresh.
Okay.
What the data source look like and how it should be implemented. Can we take a look at the code? We don't have to read, but to make sure that I get the details right.
Okay.
Can this be deleted? Like erase the whiteboard?
Yeah. We can all go. Yes. How do I log into your machine?
Oh no, we can do it from the web page, the Scilab.
The wiki page?
Yeah, the Git repository.
Okay.
PMlib, the second one, and the right.
That one right.
Right. So go to files. And then select where it says master, we need to select a different branch. Let's call delete feature. Now we go to source, click on source, and scroll down and it says slap. We want to see both the C and the .h. Okay, so we want to take a look at the slab entry, and it's somewhat convoluted, but I think basically the thing that we care about is that it has two pointers. There's a current, there's a snapshot, and it has a bitmap. And so that I think that's what we want to remember. And this guy is part of something called slab bucket. There are many of these. Right. So here we have two pointers to a data page that may or may not be pointing to the same data page.
Yeah.
And this bitmap basically implements the logic that you can divide this into chunks of the same size, and you say which portion is used and which portion is not used. That's basically the logic that thing has.
Yeah.
Now, let's go to the other file, the slab.c.
This bitmap is fixed size, depend irrespective of... let's not worry about that.
The bitmap itself, it is a fixed size, but the number of elements of the bitmap changes depending on the allocation, the size of the allocation.
So number of valid bits in the bitmap.
Right, correct. Yes, that's variable.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to go to a function called slab_p3. This is the one, yes. All right, so, okay. What happens when you call the interface that is exposed by the library, it's not this one. This is the actual logic that actually deletes. The interface outside, when you call free, what we agree we're going to do is basically annotate that, and then when the sync operation comes, we actually do the free. So, and the other logic is basically you say free, I annotate that, and I don't do anything else to minimize the latency in a critical path. When the sync is issued, then I'm going to go to that list where I have my annotations and then do the actual free. So this is the logic that actually performs the free. So what information we're going to have here is basically the memory address in which we're going to free. With the memory address, we need to find the slab entry.
Yeah.
This is the slab entry containing that data page. And so we do a find, we find it. Then, because we have memory address, we need to know which index in this data page is to know, it's the third object, right? So we have a go and update this bitmap. and it's all good. The question that I have, and of course this is happening in the Kubernetes database, not the snapshots. Question that I have is, what happens when, let's say that this bitmap, this page has only one object, and I remove the object and it becomes empty? What do I do with this page? Do I leave it there? Do I put it part of the free list?
I mean, the simplest, go with the simplest option right now, which is put it part of the free list.
And part of the free list. Yeah, although I think, okay. What was the question? What was the other problem that I had? So there was an issue with the three states that I even completely forgot about it.
I think it should be recorded.
Yeah.
And the whole discussion about the three states.
Yeah, I should have listened to that. Let's see if I can get one here. Oh, I see. So, one problem that I have, one problem that I have is that this library has two pointers, for Kubernetes and snapshot. But for some reason, I only have one bitmap, which might or may not be problematic. And I think that's the question that I'm struggling with. Because, let's say that I do the delete. There's the case that concerns me the most is when we have only one item.
Yeah.
One object. So say, oh, this one, I'm going to delete, so this is no longer here, I'm going to take my bitmap.
Yeah.
Okay. So when this happens, actually the actual content of the page doesn't change, right? Which means that these two pointers are the same. I only change the bitmap. Let's not even think about what do I do with this page now. Say that we leave it there. If I fail, what happens? I basically updated the bitmap that is shared for both Kubernetes and snapshot, and that is wrong.
Yeah. It's wrong.
Does that mean that I have to keep a bitmap for...
You only have one bitmap for each. And in fact, what I was going to suggest is that right now you have the bitmap as a static sized entity regardless of the size of the allocation, right?
Right.
You could put the bitmap in here inside.
Okay.
This is your bitmap. So your current points to a page which has a bitmap, and then the rest of the bitmap has slots. This is what I built in my C programming class, a memory allocator.
The bitmap is in the page?
Yes.
So that means that allocation will no longer be the page in size, the maximum allocation that I can...
Right.
That might be
one allocation, one page minus the bitmap size.
That's what I don't know why I think I should avoid that.
What? Which one? Like putting the bitmap in there?
No, it's having my maximum allocation being less than a page.
Maximum allocation being less.
Right, because now the bitmap will consume part of the data page.
Yeah.
Which means that the maximum allocation...
Why are you worrying about maximum allocation? I mean, it could be a page, it could be page minus 10 bytes, it could be anything, right?
True. I don't know why I'm worrying about it.
You don't have to.
Why are you so confident?
Because you can make this entity as big as you want.
No, it has to be exactly one page.
It has to be one page.
Because still we have the issue that...
So here you have, in this data structure, you have the size of the allocation, right?
Yes.
And if you know...
I cannot allocate anything bigger than a page. That's the limitation that I have right now. And the reason for that is that...
So here, do you have some counter which says how many slots are used?
How many counters says how many slots are used?
That will allow you to quickly find out where which one has space in it.
If we go back, I should be able to see. Okay, so we have the double pointers, and there is a bitmap, and then
that's you don't have a counter. So I think it's having a counter will make your life a lot easier because you don't have to scan the bitmap each time you want to see if. Actually, you do have to scan it to find the location of.
Right. The one there.
Yeah, you have to scan it. The reason I was saying if you have a counter there, then when you want to do full page allocations, you don't need a bitmap. You can just use that counter.
True.
But this is what I would do, is to put the slab and the bitmap inside the allocation, inside the page allocation. There are two reasons. One is that you don't run into this problem, right? The second is that now your bitmap size can be dependent. You don't have to create a fixed size bitmap anymore. Size of your bitmap will depend on the size of this guy. Can depend on the size, and then your bitmap uses only as much memory as needed. Because right now you have this fixed size in there.
Right. The minimum allocation that we allow is 8 bytes.
Correct.
So that's the size of the bitmap.
Mm-hmm. If you were to do it this way, you're no longer restricted to do that. You could still do it this way, even after sticking the bitmap in there as a first simple version. But now you have the flexibility and motivation as well to make that bitmap more economical.
So if I get rid of this and move it here, as you mentioned, perhaps I can add some metadata here, let's say with the size of the allocation, because all allocations here are the same size. And based on that, I may or may not interpret this first byte as a bitmap.
Yeah.
Right? So then allocations that are bigger than half a page, I don't need a bitmap for those because I can only fit one.
No, bigger than half a page, you'll use a full page, correct?
Yes, but what I mean is that I cannot fit two of those in the page.
Yeah.
So I don't need a bitmap for those.
Correct.
And I, based on the size, I can... Oh, I see.
What you want is size, and I think it's easier if you have number of slots used. I don't know how you can use it, but I get to use it in my memory allocator.
And that's basically what the bitmap is for, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to scan and add up all the bits to know how many are used. One thing is that if you get to a used size of 0, then you know that you no longer have any allocations and you can free the entire thing.
Are you worried about the case of finding out whether it's full or not as takes too long?
Full or not, or zero or not, right? You can quickly do that for allocation and deallocation when you're freeing and reclaiming space.
Okay.
Anyway, I mean, this is just convenience. It's not necessary.
But it is an issue to have one bitmap for both.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't work.
Okay. I'm going to move it to the other page. So you're suggesting to have there not only the size, but also the size of the allocation, but also maybe...
I'll send you the code to my memory allocator. The one that I write in the C programming class. You probably shouldn't be using that code, but at least you'll get some ideas by looking at it.
Okay.
The reason I'm saying you should not be using that code is probably, it has a lot of... It works. I mean, it works and I can do allocations, deallocate, everything works fine. But it's just that it's not being stress tested and I don't check for error values on certain calls. It's just a toy piece of code. You can try that. I have to go to class. Oh, I have time. Why does it say 7 minutes? I have 22 minutes.
It's actually 1:38.
Yeah. So,
my PC again went back to my clock in my machine went back 10 minutes. Okay. Some problem.
Don't you have one page of data for one page database? It depends whether I need metadata or not.
Okay. And I was thinking if you have one page of metadata, you can keep it there.
Only if I have pointers. I have.
Just dependent on the repo. Okay.
If the data there has pointers, then I do have a page for metadata. But if it doesn't, then I don't have any.
Here, right, a slab has a pointer to a bitmap, which is actually part of the slab itself. So this points to the beginning of the allocation. Then there is an address, which is, what I have is a little bit more complicated than what you described. It's because I have a data structure that defines this thing. This whole thing, this whole data structure also goes in there.
Also goes in there?
Yeah, also goes in there because I can't use malloc. Well, I don't know how you allocate memory to store this data structure.
And I store a page and then I allocate entire page and then.
And then you put all of these things, okay?
Right.
What I do is I take this data structure, also stick it in here, and then I have a bitmap, and the remaining space is used for slots. For allocations.
Oh,
that's what I'm doing here.
But then you have to also group allocations at the same size. And same
yes, way. It's a slab allocator.
Okay.
And there are all these sizes of allocations. Right. Now in there, I also have this used, and initially I didn't know if I needed it, but I actually end up using it, and then all of these are just connected as a list. So this is the data structure. It's a little bit more complicated because I have two kinds of allocations going on. One is for large allocations, and the other is for small allocations. So for large allocations, I use something called a region allocator, where I don't divide up slots and so on. I don't have bitmaps. I just take the entire page and give it to, or as many pages, because it's a large allocation. The smaller allocation is uses the slab allocator, or the, you know, that's managed by the cache allocator.
What's the threshold to differentiate large and small?
1024. It doesn't matter. You can use another threshold if you want. So here, the only detail here is that to find out how many slots you have that you can allocate, it becomes, you have to solve two simultaneous equations, because given the size of that slot, the size of the bitmap changes.
Yes.
But you don't know the size of the bitmap. You need the size of the bitmap to compute how many slots you can have in the page.
Yes.
So it's two simultaneous equations.
Right, but
which is why it looks complicated like this, to find out how many slots you can have.
As long as it's constant time, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, it is.
Because you need more bits if your allocation are smaller.
Exactly. Yeah, so I can send you this.
Still, I might have to have a simple mechanism to have large allocations. I mean, allocations bigger than a page. I don't know if SQLite was gonna need that or not. But if it does, I have to go and I have to go back and implement that.
You said it takes 1 KB pages.
That is true. So I won't need it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I would recommend. Now you could alternatively do two bitmaps inside that top level data structure, one for current and one for snapshot.
If I do that, then the size of the slab entry is going to grow, so I'm going to have less of those per page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, if you saw it, it takes a fixed amount of space.
You write this thing once and then you can use it many, many times. It's just a little bit more complicated when you write it the first time around.
The problem with this one is that it's in persistent memory.
Hmm?
I think the main issue with this one is persistent memory.
You need to be persistent, right? No? You don't need to
be. No. Yeah. But what it means that I try to avoid having like pointers and things like that, because when you restore it, you're going to have to fix all that. So that's why I don't keep them in the list or anything like that.
Which list? Do list?
Like you have your slab, right? You allocate memory and you basically have, if you say, give me n bytes, you allocate n plus something else.
Mm.
Or you stub your metadata there.
Mm.
And then you link that.
Mm.
And that's how you basically have all of them all the same size in the group. You say, it has to be in this group.
But there are a whole bunch of pointers in there.
Right, I do that a little bit differently.
Yeah, so don't use it.
I'm going to use your suggestion of the adding there and put the bitmap here. And then use the logic, have a bitmap or not, based on the size of the allocation.
Yeah, what I have is a pointer to that first slot. Instead of a pointer, you can create an offset.
Yeah.
It might be better. Yeah. All right, guys. Get ready for class.